Coming up on the Star Wars Report podcast, we're talking about the brand new news of the latest casting announcement. That's right. Woody Harrelson. Get the Hunger Games. It's time for the Han Solo movie. We're learning more about that as well as so many announcements. Let's get started with the show right now. Folks, welcome back. It is the Star Wars Report podcast. I'm your host, Riley Blanton. So glad you've tuned in. Welcome. Good morning. Good evening. Please delete as appropriate. Boy, howdy. We got a big show for you. Man, it's the Star Wars Report podcast. Let's welcome to the show my good friend and yours. It's Mr. Mark Erleman.
How we doing, Star Wars fans? It feels like it was just yesterday or just a few minutes ago. We were all chatting, having fun.
Exactly.
It's been a week, right?
I'm holding on to my Kylo Ren exclusive Disney Build a Lightsaber for the show today. Ooh. And I'm doing it very carefully because I'm precariously holding like the phone with the show audio in my right hand and the Kylo Ren in my left hand. Let's see if I wonder if it'll catch the sound. Hang on. Where I was like, where is the ignition button? Oh, there we go. Let's see if it works. All right. Yeah, now we're talking.
Nice.
So, all right. Well, I'm done playing with this thing. Well, actually, who's kidding? I'm not. But let's not waste any time. Let's welcome in the producer of the program. It's Mr. Bruce Gibson. What's going on, Bruce?
Hey, Jason. Hey, Star Wars fans. This is Jimmy Mack. Oh, wait. I'm sorry.
Bruce,
wrong show. Wrong person.
What are you doing? What? This is not that show. Who are you producing for? Hang on.
How did you think that they were invading you?
I'm not feeling safe. I don't know what I'm doing. Where am I?
You better use that lightsaber, I'll tell you.
Is it? I feel like I need to restart the show and just pretend like I'm in the middle of a conversation at the beginning. All right, I'm going to stop.
You just got to watch out. Steve might be in the chat next. He'll take over.
I was not expecting that. I don't even know where to go.
Bruce comes in and he's like the low blow. He's like, here we go. I'm coming at you hard. Coming at you fast.
I like to throw you off, Riley. Now you don't know what to do with the show.
I know. I feel like I can't help it. I just feel like, you know, Star Wars celebrations coming up. I'm really getting myself in trouble. No. You're listening to the Star Wars Report. I can tell you this about this podcast. It's going to be just about the most fun hour of Star Wars podcasting you have this week, because that's our goal here, is to just have some fun, talk Star Wars, and Mark, you coined this term a long time ago, be a unifying force in fandom. And we've got so many things to talk about. Bruce, again, bravo, sir. An excellent, excellent content has been provided, because we've been gone all week. Let me make the announcement right now. If you're listening to this on the podcast feed this Monday morning as it's released, coming up later in the week, this Thursday morning for the second edition, we have none other than my sister, Bethany Blanton, is going to help us give the lowdown on our trip to Disney World and our attendance to the big Carrie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds tribute that happened at Hollywood Studios. We'll give you all the details on that for this Thursday show. And I'll tell you this, I had an unexpected revelation on fandom, and really an epiphany. Yeah, an epiphany, Mark. I like using that word when I can do it. An epiphany. I had a fresh new perspective on Star Wars lent by some really unique Star Wars fans that I'd never really fully been able to appreciate or consider. And I'll tell you what, guys, you're just going to have to subscribe to the podcast and listen this Thursday. How was that? Was that good, Bruce? Was that a good tease?
Oh, my gosh, what a teaser.
enough teasing.
Tune in Thursday, right?
Yeah, no, that's this coming Thursday. I'm so excited to be doing these twice weekly. And so we're going to keep
it up. I'm so confused. We got like two shows a week. That's like... it's like the double stuffed Oreo. I like those better than the singles. So this is going to be really good.
You know, Bruce, when Han Solo did the Kessel run in under 12 parsecs, had it had actual physics, that would have took him like, what, 23 years? Like, I feel like we're doing some time traveling ourselves. Like, we've got a new hyperdrive. It's like, instead of 0.5, we're at 0.003. We're really moving.
Yeah. And then while I'm making cool announcements on the show next week, Stephen Stanton. How about that? How about that, folks?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what we're doing. Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know what? Enough dilly-dallying. Let's jump straight into the news.
We have something to report.
Data have the news.
Data brought to us by the Bothan spies.
We can send a clear transmission.
There it is. Listen.
It's official. It's official. It's official. Extra, extra, extra. It's on StarWars.com, folks, which means it is unquestionable. I saw the Kitster the profile picture, which on the have you ever noticed that with this, like, whenever the StarWars.com staff page, you know, is the one that posts the blog post, the bio, yeah, there isn't a bio because it's just like a press release. So they put a picture of Kitster. It's really subtle. It's great. It's the best thing ever. Woody Harrelson is a part of the Han Solo spinoff film. Man, a surprise to me. I had not really heard any rumors about it before. I'm anxious to get your gentlemen's thoughts on the topic, but I do want to introduce our first sponsor for today very quickly before we jump into the dive deep into the discussion. And of course, that's Geek Fuel, making the Star Wars Report podcast happen. And by supporting us, and we want to support them. And what they do is they ship out a mystery box for geeks, gamers, and Star Wars fans just like you. And they're giving Star Wars Report listeners a very special deal. If you subscribe to their box service, their monthly mystery box at geekfuel.com/StarWarsReport, you're going to get a free bonus Star Wars item. That's right. Every box has a guaranteed $50 of value for just $15 plus shipping and handling. Every box guaranteed to have 5 to 7 unique geeky items like t-shirts, posters, and so much more. Go to geekfuel.com/StarWarsReport. That's geekfuel.com/StarWarsReport. Woody Harrelson. What'd you think, Bruce? You surprised? You like, oh, that fits? What was your initial reaction to the news?
When I heard the news, it just confirmed the rumor that I did hear from Variety. So I kind of knew this was coming. Variety had reported that they had reliable sources that said that Woody Harrelson would be in the new Han Solo movie playing Han Solo's mentor, which I think I can see him being a scoundrel that teaches someone to be a scoundrel.
Mark, are you a fan of the Hunger Games?
Yes. Yes, so do you I am. See I'm a him? Fan of Woody Harrelson in general. I mean, going all the way back to Cheers, Woody's been my boy.
Like, so let me ask you
Zombieland,
this.
Zombieland. You know, yeah, I was just telling my wife, because my wife's like, oh, he's coming back. I'm like, what are you? He was in the Hunger Games. She didn't watch it enough to recall that. I was
gotcha.
Like,
gotcha.
But I too caught the rumor. I caught it like the day before. It was like literally the next day, the official announcement. So I didn't really have time to digest it. I think for me, it's more that I'm finding I'm still in that camp of I don't care that much about the Han Solo movie. I haven't been told enough to be like, ooh, that's a story I want to be told.
Yeah.
But right now it's the supporting cast that's drawing my awesome meter. You know, I mean, like, I'm still not sold on Alden Ehrenreich. I'm taking everyone's advice. Everyone says he's a great actor. Riley, you've sang his praises. So I've got faith in that.
Yeah.
But Donald Glover, I'm tickled about him.
100%.
Amelia Clark, tickled about her. And Woody, I'm like I said, he's my boy. So I'm super excited about that. I'm really hoping beyond hope that this is how the dynamic duo got together. And this is how Han and Chewie become a team. That's the origin story I want. I would hate to find out that Chewie has no role in this film.
I want the origin story, but I want to be... And repeated viewings of Rogue One struck me as this is a potential problem. I didn't see it as a problem with Rogue One because I really didn't notice or react to some of the overt fan service kind of references in Rogue One. But especially when you're talking about Han Solo movie, like... You can literally do every last reference. It could be like, I'm a gambler here. But I'm sure I'll never lose this T-100 freighter, right? And so like you could see that kind of thing, or maybe you know something. It's gonna be something like, you know, I hear about this race, the Kessel Run, but no one's ever done it in less than 14 parsecs. So it's impossible. Like, get it? And, like, turn to the camera. There's so
yeah,
so
we
many
don't want that. I don't want winks at the camera.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, technically, that retcon is gone. I mean, Legends came up with a very creative way of going around that by creating the Maw, which was a cluster of black holes around basically, it was an asteroid base Palpatine had where he was doing experiments. And Han basically skirted. And the ship's engines on the Falcon were so strong, he was able to bend space and time, thus completing, you know, a distance and time. And that's the way they retconned it. And it's Legends now. It's gone. So we could have that put in the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe Legends is canon now. Mark has just defined it.
Well, but yeah, so I guess that's what I'm... I think there's some potential there. But I will say this. It's a really... I love the casting announcement. I mean, my main context for Woody Harrelson as an actor is, of course, Haymitch from The Hunger Games. And he is a mentor role there, so it's hard to... I wonder if he is going to be sort of like the skilled yet drunken, disorderly type of fellow.
So you've never seen Zombieland then, Riley?
I have, yes. He was really good at that,
too. I see, that's kind of the role I'm seeing. Like, I want someone to be like that version of his acting in the past, because I don't know. I just see Han Solo coming from that, you know, like the swashbuckling, just total, almost borderline D-bag. You know what I mean? When I first think about Han Solo, the very first time I saw him, he was the Cassian Andor, a guy you didn't trust at first. You're like, so I don't know about this guy. And I want that brought back to Han.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I'm really excited for the potential, and I
just want to say, I really see Woody in this movie as being Snoke. I think we finally figured it out. He's the right age. He's got the right facial structure.
We need a Snoke sounder, like, I don't know, just some kind of. I don't have anything. If I did, I would just hit a button just for, like, we need a Snoke horn just whenever it's brought up.
Snoke horn. Like, put that in your snark horn.
Snoke that in your pipe. No, put that in your pipe and snoke it. No, all right. Well, I'll stop. George Lucas.
That's enough snoking around. That's
all right. George Lucas, this is official in the LA Times. You know, I feel like a measure of victory. George Lucas will make his home, or at least the home to his $1 billion museum, Los Angeles, the city of
Snoke
angels.
Snoke him once. You won't snoke him twice.
Right, stop.
He'll
it.
Move locations.
Stop it. No. It stops. Make it stop.
I couldn't help myself. Right. You know, this one, I'm kind of like, you know, it would seem like a no-brainer that it was going to go somewhere in L.A. Kind of did seem like, you know, once they weren't putting it where they were going to put it over in, was it Detroit? Was they were trying to put
no,
it?
No, Chicago. Yeah.
Chicago. See, and if it didn't make it Chicago, you knew it was going to go somewhere sunny.
Yeah, no. Oh, absolutely. Well, it is always sunny in Los Angeles. Isn't that the TV show? I think so. No. So it's getting a 275,000 foot museum, tens of thousands of jobs in construction, and a number of permanent jobs, more than 1,000 as an estimate. And that's the low ball. It's going to feature things like, it's not just Star Wars stuff, guys. It's going to be, of course, the Norman Rockwell paintings, the incredible collection of art and film artifacts and history that George Lucas has in his personal collection. And it's, man, the Los Angeles Museum of Art director is involved. Guys from the Museum of Motion Pictures, DreamWorks Animation, creative chief executive, Jeffrey Katzenberger, and of course the City Board of Supervisors, all basically pitching and making this thing happen, and it's official. So congratulations, Los Angeles. Now there's another reason for me to want to visit the city, and I still haven't. Other than flying through the airport, which makes me sad. But there's that. all right. So let's talk about Rian Johnson. Enough about Gareth Edwards. Let's talk some episode 8. There's a new piece in USA Today that's out where we're talking about the next saga film, because now that we're past Rogue One, of course, it's time to get in the mode. Put on your episode 8 hat, folks, because that's what we're talking about. It's had a title from the start. Is the interesting aspect of this? Bruce, tell me about this new piece.
Well, I'll tell you what the title is. No, wait, I don't know the title.
So I was like, whoa, what? Wait, what? Breaking news, folks.
No, I told Ryan that I would not reveal the title, so no worries here.
Oh, how is he these days?
Oh, he's doing great. We actually had a pizza the other night. He's doing so great. He ate 3/4 of it. I only had like 2 slices. He ate all the other 6.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he ate 8.
No. No, we had 8, but he had 6. So he never got to his episode 8 while eating the pizza, but we named it.
But he named the slices of pizza.
Okay. We named the slices of pizza.
Well, was it close to the name of the movie? Can you give us a hint?
Well, I'll tell you, the seventh slice was The Force Awakens.
So, yeah, I thought you were going to go for like the
Riley, Awakens. Tonally, episode 8 is going to be like the hour of this podcast.
Well, come I on. Thought that, man, I thought the seventh slice tasted way too much like the fourth slice. I thought
it did. And so did it tasted like the first one, too. But we had we didn't just have pizza. We had a side item. We had a Rogue One on the side.
Okay, so. I gotcha. Was Rogue One like the shriveled jalapeno pepper, or was it more of the delicious like garlic dip? This is the best metaphor ever.
Served with ranch.
Yes, it stood on its own.
You know, I really felt though that there's a circular effect of the taste if you eat the entire pizza in a row, and like if you that like the first pizza reflects the sixth pizza. But the... All right, I'm going to stop. That was obscure. Yeah. All right, that officially got too obscure when I started doing the pizza ring theory. Yeah. I'm going to stop now. All right, so
I would have eaten more pizza, but he started with the fourth and fifth and sixth slice. Then he went to the first, second, and third. I only got the seventh. So.
Well, some of the things Johnson said, he talked about how episode 8 is going to emphasize on fun, right?
Thank you,
they're aiming for an enjoyable experience rather than a darker middle chapter in the new trilogy. What I find interesting about that is are they saying rather than a darker middle chapter as a reference to Empire Strikes Back, or are they saying that because it was supposed to be a darker middle chapter and he's trying to make it more fun and peppy? It's kind of like How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days when they're talking about Ebola, but it's surprisingly, you know, upbeat. Like,
yeah, yeah. By the way, folks, I'm just going to take a moment to time out to say, in what universe do we live in where Mark Herlman is the one that brings Bruce and I back to topic? That the fact that just happened.
I know. I got really confused. I was like, is he really talking?
You were talking about pizza, and I was thinking Ninja Turtles, and I'm like, uh-oh, wrong genre.
Yeah. Well, all right. So here's the main things. Fans are going to find more about The Force Awakens heroes, but here's the thing that basically he's saying is that the director said it's very much, it feels like what we all go through in adolescence, the dawning of this new chapter in our lives. He goes on to say that the familial themes are, quote, a huge part, especially with Rey's character, something that was a really powerful part of her setup and something I really wanted to dig into with this. Oh, he's so teasing. Oh, he's so...
Please be Kenobi. Please be Kenobi. Please be Kenobi. I've shifted from Skywalker to Kenobi camp.
You're just like, you have the wrong theory. You're in the wrong place. I'm so excited.
These aren't the parents you're looking for. Move along.
For over 1,000 generations, the Jedi Knights were the guardians of peace and justice. All right, I'm going to stop. So Luke Skywalker, right? The emotional entry point is essentially what he refers to. Quote, what's going on with Luke Skywalker? Well, that's the essential question. Quote, I'm approaching it with a take that I hope feels honest and real and is going to be interesting with folks and make sense. And it already does have a title, but we don't know what it is. So,
well, this definitely sounds like this is a Luke and Rey movie, which I think we kind of knew, but it really seems the emphasis as he's talking more and more, it's Luke and Rey. I guess it's kind of like Luke and Yoda in The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah. No,
we're not hearing about anybody else. What do you think about the title?
No, I mean, why sit on the title? I mean, that's what gets me is how long have they had the title? And if they've had it since before they really even started, like, why not share that? Like, that
well, they still could
really...
change the title. They still could change it. And I'm sure they wanted to wait till after Rogue One has left theaters before they go there. And maybe they're saving it for us at Orlando.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a celebration thing, I'm pretty sure. And they might reveal it sooner.
So, but if they do that, though, do you think that they'll do it in the trailer and you'll get both at once?
No, well, they'll do it in the panel. They'll leave.
I mean, because I was naturally thinking they were just going to do the trailer, but it seems a little odd to wait for the title and then do both of them, unless you were going to do both of them all at once, which I guess that would be pretty bombastic.
But, yeah, if that's like, if that's
but at the same time, it's kind of like when you're wrapping Christmas gifts for your kids and you're like, do I want to put all the Star Wars stuff in one box, or do I want to put all 28 in separate boxes so my kid gets 28 separate awesome Star Wars things? Yeah. Or do we just give them like one big play center box that's just
all one box
of Star Wars awesome? I mean, it's a tough decision.
All in one box. All in one box. You know, when Anaheim, when they did that teaser trailer and Han comes out and says, Chewie, we're home. That was huge. We're not going to have a moment like that in this teaser trailer.
You don't think so?
They need a teaser trailer, and then the title comes up, and everybody goes nuts.
Yeah.
You're right. You're right. The title itself would be that moment, because you're right. I mean, we had Chewie at home, and then we had the blank screen, and my name's Rex. You can call me Captain. When they had Rex show back up, was, I mean, those two moments,
that was great.
They were both followed by darkness. And everybody went, the collective held breath. And that makes sense. You do the title, everybody's all freaking out, and then bam, blah, 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 Star Wars Episode 8, the blah, 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 blah. Oh, my God, it's the blah, 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 blah.
Mark, I'm just going to clip out that audio, and that's just going to be the first thing I play on our Episode 8 trailer reaction podcast.
Blah, 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 blah. It's
episode 8.
Episode 8, the blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I'll tell you what. We have some new stuff on Rogue One as well that I want to hit on in the news here. And that is a new Gareth interview with Empire Magazine. This is some fascinating stuff. So we're talking about the idea of the crawl. And this, man, there's so much like post-analysis of Rogue One. And we're learning already, like super early in the process, how different this film is at various points. Let's take a... actually, you know what? I want to just specifically hit on the first screenplay, which Gary Whitta wrote, and he wrote a crawl for it, which I thought was fascinating. This is a direct quote from Gary. I said Gary Edwards, Gareth Edwards, Gary Edwards and Gareth Whitta. It is very similar, folks. I'm not gonna lie. You learn that doing the crawl, that a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, and it has four dots in it, not three, you get extra marks for that. But then at some point, it was probably like 6 months before we were filming, and we were in a meeting, and they talked about not having an opening crawl because these are standalone films, not part of the sagas. And if I'm honest, I was initially kind of like, what? I want a crawl.
Yeah.
It was like the setup. Our film was kind of born out of the crawl. The reason that we exist is because of the previous crawl. So it feels like that infinite loop would never end, but it was a small thing to give up to do Star Wars. We have on the same token, he talked about having versions of the films with wipes, like the traditional Lucas style. I never noticed them when I watched the movie growing up, but once somebody pointed out to me Lucas's like side pant, wipes. And in fact, like right now on the 24/7 Star Wars movie loop that I have set up in the studio here, it's Return of the Jedi, and it just did the wipe from Tatooine to the Death Star at the end of the Jabba sequence. And yeah, that's what they had, but they sacrificed that just kind of to really push the new direction, which is kind of funny because I still think that, to me, Rogue One had a more of a Lucasian Lucas feel than The Force Awakens did, to be honest. I really do think. But here's the real meat, and this is what I want to ask you, Bruce. So Yahoo Movies, which, by the way, when you're thinking journalistic piety, look no further than Yahoo News. Excuse me, Yahoo Movies. I kid. I'm just used, guys, I apologize. I'm just used to, I usually take StarWars.com, Variety, Chris Taylor at Mashable, and Anthony Bresnikan at Entertainment Weekly. And like, those are the only people I trust anymore for Star Wars news. I'm so jaded at this point.
He's like, abandoned it down the hatches.
But they interviewed,
only trusted verified sources.
They interviewed both Tony Gilroy, who famously was rumored to get a $5 million payday. $5 million just for the rewrites and supervising the reshoots. Of course, that was never confirmed, but there's some pretty good sources saying that was the case. And of course, another editor, Colin Gowdy, that were talking about the different changes in the films and how it affected it. And let's just get the list here. And then, Bruce, I'll get your reaction. The scene, Cassian's introduction with the spy, How about Bodhi traipsing through Jeddah on his way to see Saw? How about Jyn Erso? And how they set up her escape from the transporter? That was all reshoots.
That was all added in. Those were scenes that didn't exist. After we saw Jyn as a little girl, it goes to the opening sequence saying Rogue One, and then it goes to Jyn there talking with Mon Mothma. It goes straight to that. We skipped all these other things. They really needed this bridge.
I imagine something else was in place, and they replaced it with the reshoots, is what if I had to guess. But let me get your reaction, sir. Like, what does this tell you about the movie and process of the film? Does it kind of recognize or perhaps solidify your opinion on the characters of the film? I'm curious. I have thoughts, but I want to get yours first.
Yeah, my thought is that they really didn't feel like they established the characters. I think when they watched the first screening of it, there wasn't a connection and an empathy for these characters. So they really need to set them up and get you to know them and put them in their place as to why they are where they are. And I think that was probably something that was really lacking, and probably what they had to adjust later in the third act was probably to cut that act down so they can make more room for the first act.
Yes, I agree 100%. With Rogue One, let me turn to camera real quick just to really emphasize this to everyone watching on the Facebook feed and listening to this podcast. I love Rogue One. I like Rogue One even more than The Force Awakens, and I love The Force Awakens. Coming out of that movie, I was stunned. I was shocked. I was surprised. I couldn't believe how much I liked it. I couldn't believe that they went there and killing off the characters. I couldn't believe how well it connected the background of A New Hope. Having said that, upon repeated viewings, I do think there is a lack of empathy for the characters because we don't learn enough about their motivations. They're kind of alluded to in dialogue, but not really. We don't see it. This is the difference between one of my favorite Marvel films, The Guardians of the Galaxy, and Rogue One. And that's the fact that, just for example, in The Guardians of the Galaxy, when you learn about Drax the Destroyer, you know who he is and what made him that way and how his family was killed. You even see the Gamora's rejection by her father and why she's out to do something to find her own path. And you see that, and you see her motivations. And most importantly, I almost said Starkiller. you have Chris Pratt's character. Why did I suddenly blank on Star-Lord?
Star-Lord.
You have Star-Lord, and you see him as a boy lose his mother to cancer and then be kidnapped in the same night, and how that never really knowing who his father was and being a loner, and that defines who he is as a character and makes you really understand what his motivations are. And to be honest, that is missing a bit from Rogue One. Like, in my opinion, I really do think that I wanted to see Bodhi Rook betray the Empire. I wanted to see that moral dilemma that he had where he left. I wanted to see Cassian lose everything because, you know, you're not the only one that's lost everything. I want to know what that means for that character. I want to see Jyn fight on her lonesome and not just hear about how Saw abandoned her, but see it. Show, don't tell. And that's only to the characters, because the film is so incredible in the way that it tells the story and the flow of the incredible stakes that is the Death Star, and the theme of sacrifice and hope and courage that's there. To me, that all outweighs that weakness. But I do think that's a weakness. Your thoughts, Mark?
Well, where's the magic number? Because, you know, you mentioned Guardians of the Galaxy. And when you think about it, Groot does it. I mean, he just says, "I am Groot." So he's kind of tied with Rocket. So there are really only four characters there. So it's really easy to work with four characters. But I think about Ocean's 11, and I love all three of those movies. And I don't feel like those movies suffer for the characters that are side characters not having a lack of time. Magnificent Seven, I like that movie. But again, the same complaint. I feel it's a valid complaint, but I enjoyed what I got. And it was the same with Rogue One. I feel like what we got, especially with those opening scenes, I think without those, it would have been a even worse feeling across the board for the audience is more people would have felt like, oh, well, there wasn't enough of all these characters. Whereas what they did give us, it was that line where, like, I felt okay with it. I mean, I can recognize the complaint, but it makes me wonder, where is that line? Because, you know, they did cut some of the characters out to the point where, like, Melnish or whatever his name was, like, he didn't have a big role, but he was there. He helped break Jin out at the beginning. He was there at the end. Yeah. He came back a couple times. There were characters that could have had a bigger role. But I mean, we think about it. We got Jin, we got Cassian and K2. We've got Baze, and we've got Chirrut, and we've got Bodhi. I mean, there's about six of them. I mean, five works, but six doesn't. Like,
to say nothing
where
of
does that number? I mean, do we have a hard line there? When does it become difficult to have an ensemble cast and really get that out there where every one of them has a resonance with the audience?
I don't think there's a magic number, but I think certainly the formula with A New Hope speaks well. You have the main three, and you have the fuzzy co-pilot and the mentor. And that sort of defines the arc of the film. That's not to say Owen and Beru don't have a significant role. I mean, like, what would Luke Skywalker have done without the blue milk and the weird lettuce that she manufactured?
Well, but that example, I mean, we got Chewie, we've got R2. There are two characters that don't actually speak. They do communicate, but it's all through the side characters. So that alone makes it a little easier. And when you think about it, I mean, K2, he talks. He's a talking droid. It's kind of harder to pull off, or not like a chopper.
Yeah. No, that's true. So true. That's like my one upon repeated viewings. That's like my one complaint. I didn't really have an overarching theme like that where there was a specific element that I felt was a shortcoming for the movie when it comes to The Force Awakens. But I just... the theme of redemption through courage and sacrificing themselves and like establishing and building up to that hope and the lines, like, I'll forgive all of that because I love Rogue One so much. I'm sorry, guys. Someone asked me, I've had this happen a couple times this week, especially we got back to ROTC at school this week, and I was talking to a cadet, and he's like, so what'd you think of the movie? Did you like it? And I just looked over and I'm like, I mean, it's not even fair. I can't answer that question. Like, there will not be a Star Wars movie that I don't like because I love the universe. I love the characters. I mean, it's feasible, like, but the likelihood ain't high. I'm going to like these movies, guys, because you know what? It turns out I do a podcast about it.
This is the Star Wars Report Podcast. Boring conversation, anyway.
We'll continue our Rogue One discussion here in just a moment, but I also want to tell you about our other sponsor for today, and that's Entertain Art. Official licensed and ready to hang wall art from Disney, Star Wars, Marvel, DC, and so many more. Some amazing original Rogue One designs, speaking of Rogue One, that you can find at starwarsreport.com/art. Entertain Art's a passionate team of folks creating in-house artwork that's beautifully done. High-quality canvas, both regular and metallic, embellished products, more than 1,000 designs, and of course, head over there, check it out, and if you like what you see, when you check out, use discount code SWR, that's SWR20, for 20% off when you check out at Entertain Art. Some just amazing, amazing crafted artwork from that galaxy far, far away. StarWarsReport.com/art, StarWarsReport.com/art. And we thank Entertain Art for supporting the podcast. Gentlemen, we do have a couple last details on Rogue One. This is kind of... it's kind of our Rogue One wrap-up. It's happening soon. It's happening. Happening? It's happening. Happening? Yeah, happening.
My tongue is numb.
It's happening sooner here than with The Force Awakens, but we have a couple more pieces, specifically on more evidence on the an alternate ending to Rogue One. This surprised me. Mark, you want to take us through this? Nope, I think we may have lost Mark. No, I
Is that you playing or am I playing? I've got something playing in the ears.
I was going to say, that's definitely you, Mark. What's funny is that that awkward silence, I thought we'd lost you for a second, and then I realized that I did kind of cold toss to you last minute, and it sounded exactly like a BuzzFeed quiz. Yeah, there are three changes to the ending of Rogue One. The second one, you won't believe. No, this is absolutely fascinating stuff that that the AV Club actually was linking to about more evidence of the I hate to say alternate ending, but it was pretty I was pretty interested in it myself. And this comes from an ABC News behind the scenes look at the making of K2SO. And something's kind of revealed. Did you catch this, Mark? I don't know if you had a chance to see
this. Yeah, I did. This was actually, we were talking about this on the Padawan Perspective, in fact, that it shows Cassian Andor laying on the ground, and it definitely looks like we're watching Alan play out a K2SO death scene. So the fact that he lands next to one Cassian Andor kind of makes you think that it's our K2SO and not one of the Imperials.
Yep. It's definitely, I mean, he's definitely getting shot up.
And they're on a beach. I mean, they're not inside a building. They are on the outside. It looks like the bunker that we see Chirrut and Baze huddled at.
Yeah.
Right by the switch. So you almost wonder if the switch was ever involved before and it was just a raid on the bunker before and that the switch came afterwards. I don't know. I'm definitely excited about the aspect that there's so much about this that they're going to be able to tell us down the road. Even
do you think they will?
With the sequel trilogy. Oh, I totally think they will. The question is will they eventually give us another copy of the movie with bonus features? Like, that's where I'm worried about. It's like Gareth Edwards went nuts with this. There's so much stuff that they were using extra for the trailers, stuff like that. Like, I couldn't imagine them not having bonus reels.
Yeah, no. Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
There's a lot of changes here in this third act. A lot.
And again, it's not until repeated viewings, but that's when you really start to notice how kind of abrupt the transitions. Like, because once the Death Star, man, it's just like one after another after another. It's just like bam, bam, bam. And that's the difference I'm getting. You know what? And here's an interesting thing. One of my favorite moments, with the exception of the arrival of the Red Squadron, and Gold Squadron, this is Gold Leader. Get set up for your attack run. That was amazing. Probably my second favorite part of that entire space battle was, and I'm now mad at myself for not queuing up this audio. If I had, I would have queued Hammer Time. Hammer Time. Again, we've talked about this before. If this is not on YouTube, a remix. Somebody link me or tweet me a YouTube remix of that shot with Hammer Time, please. As a favor to me and as a favor to Star Wars fans everywhere. But we're all worried about the crew. Because he's like, brace for impact. And you're like, no! And you don't know what happens. Because that's a heavy hit.
We do know what happens, though. Fortunately, you're paying attention, a keen eye.
Anthony Bresnikan comes to the rescue. Bruce, you want to walk us through what Brezzy has to say?
Okay, well, the Brez points out that the Hammerhead ship that crashes into the Star Destroyer, that pushes the other Star Destroyer into it, what happened to the Hammerhead? Did it also get destroyed? And it's revealed here, and with Mark's keen eye, that the Hammerhead may not have survived, but there were escape pods that were used. The crew got off of the ship. Is that right, Mark?
Oh, thank God.
Yep, that's right. The ILM visual effects supervisor, John Knoll, mentioned that he had thought about it all the way to the end. And if you're actually looking, when the Star Destroyers start to collide, you could see that the Hammerhead has already launched all life pods. They were even thinking about having a momentary scene with them on the beach, but that got completely scrapped. So could you think about it? I mean, they're pretty much hosed anyway, unless they happen to get launched off to the side. I don't think you're going to survive that direct hit.
Yeah. He's all like, time to abandon ship. Blip, blip, blip. I love that. By the way, I love it. You know what? That scene, seeing that Corvette smash into it, that reminded me of something Lucas would do. It reminded me of that opening sequence in Revenge of the Sith, which is still, by the way, guys, more than 10 years, like 12 years after the release of Revenge of the Sith, That opening space battle still holds up ridiculously well. But like seeing the big cruisers in Revenge of the Sith, it reminded me of that so much.
Well, I mean, to a degree, he tried doing it in Episode 6. I mean, the executor didn't really move the Death Star much, but it did collide.
Yeah, those things have a lot of thrust, man. Like,
apparently the engines on the Death Star were fully operational at the time.
Well, and I love the fact, man. See, now I feel like the Hammerhead, it's kind of like Battlestar Galactica in some ways. I feel like that ship design was designed like years and years ago, when the technology of shields was so, like, it got so good at some point that they, like, well, we're just going to make, like, a freaking big hunk of metal and we'll just ram. You know, it's like the ironclads ships in the Civil War for, like, history buffs. We're like, mm-hmm. You know what? We're just going to take this old ship and slap a bunch of steel plating to the front and just ram through other ships. Let's do that. Desperate times,
ramming
folks.
Speed!
Ramming speed. Wait, was that a Sean Connery? Can you imagine if Sean... I still think it was a big missed opportunity not to have an Athorian pilot. That would have been hilarious.
Yes.
Come on, guys. In a
good
movie
okay,
where you're
I'll
like,
give you some props on that one, my man. That's
well,
good.
Well, like, here's the thing. If you can have a lingering shot of blue milk, and if you can be like, hey, watch yourself, and if you can have... Right, if you can have all of that, you can have it just be on the nose, just play it to the crowd, and just have a hammerhead, like a super awesome... hardcore, like with an eye patch, a bandolier.
No, give him the little vocabulator so you could actually hear him talk. Like he does his little,
oh, I would love
sound,
to see
and
that.
It's like, yeah, dude, that would have been so good.
Such a missed opportunity. Such a missed opportunity.
Story group, are you listening?
All right.
He's like, instead of it's a trap, it's a ram.
Ramming speed. All right. Well, let's jump. Let's jump from pilots and smugglers and awesome Athorians to bounty hunters.
It's worth a lot to me.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know it. It's time for
as you wish.
Boba's bounty. Each week, although we haven't done this for a while, we talk about something we did. Experienced or otherwise had a great time with in the world of Star Wars. You seen a Star Wars, Mark? Been up to anything?
Oh, Star Wars. There's Star Wars stuff. Star Wars Story. There's a Rogue One Star Wars Story. The book,
actually,
by Alexander Freed. It has a uncanny ability to, as me and Nathan have called it, the Stover effect, where provides insight into characters that don't talk a lot in the film. Characters who you might want to know more about, Riley.
Okay.
You know, maybe Bodhi, things like that.
Okay.
So I had that. I've been flipping through that. It's really good. It brings actually quite a bit of stuff. I was blown away by the added insight that it provides. But beyond that, there was an author that was traveling through the state of Oregon because he lives in Coos Bay, Oregon, by the name of Timothy Zahn. And he
Never
stopped by
him.
Grants Pass. And I'm kicking myself because I didn't get there in time. I didn't get tickets.
What?
I'm like, are you kidding?
He
are you
in
kidding
your
me?
Town.
Like,
Timothy Zahn may as well have knocked on your door.
My coworker went, so I'm going to be hounding him this week at work. Like, so, dude, tell me.
Did you not know what's happening?
Drag me next time.
Did you not know what's happening? Or did you know and you didn't go? Or
I found out about it like the day before it happened or 2 days before it happened. And I found out about it from Facebook, but they had a flyer out on it's an Oregon Books building that's off of one of our main streets, but it's a street before, so like it's on E Street, and I always turn on D Street to take my daughter to dance class, so I don't come down that side of town, and when I do, I take what's called the Parkway, and I go a totally different route to get to the movie theater, so I never saw the sign, and then I saw the one thing on Facebook, and I was like, oh, I gotta go down and get the tickets, and by the time I found out about it, the tickets already sold out, so I was like, oh, I'll go down. I'll just go wait outside, be one of those creepy guys and be like, hey, I just don't fucking, you know, you're going to talk. So I was going to do that. And then I totally spaced it. So I've been kicking myself royally for it ever since. I'm like tagging us on every comment. So Zahn knows, like, hey, by the way, this one nut in Oregon, like he's kicking himself really bad right now. And like, if you ever see him, maybe you'll remember him because you'll like see his nutty face on his profile.
A certifiable tragedy. Tim Zahn, he's the man. He's so much fun at Dragon Con every year, too. It's always a great time to have him. At the Star Wars track there. So hopefully he'll be there again this week, or this year rather, to talk about the Thrawn novel, which comes out soon, right? Sometime soon?
I believe it's coming out in May.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Okay.
I think around
I could be wrong. I'm pulling that out of my head.
Yeah, because we have
it's either April or May.
Well,
it's
I'm excited for the Thrawn book. You know what I'm more excited for, guys?
It's probably going to be April, so it'll be at Celebration. I mean, yeah. That makes more sense.
You know what I'm more excited for even than the Thrawn book as much as I am? I'm excited for Sleeveless Thrawn. I see Sleeveless Thrawn in the Rebels trailer. He's just like, dude's been doing some of the bicep curls, man. He's just like, not only does he whisper like, I am Grand Admiral Thrawn. I speak like this when I'm really tired. It's really hard to understand what I'm saying.
Oh, but see, the organ's playing, so it makes it okay. You know? And it's April 11th, by the way.
No, it doesn't. Be for celebration. I can't understand what he's saying. It's very hard to be intimidating. When you're talking,
I'm Admiral Thrawn. Oh, no, Riley, no, you don't understand. See, when I worked at Kodak, we worked in the dark, and we worked around high-speed reciprocating choppers, machines that would cha-cha-cha-cha-cha. And when you're working with somebody that's really big and intimidating and might even have glowing eyes in the dark, and they lean over you, and they're trying to tell you how to do your job, and you can't understand a word that they're saying, it's very intimidating, because after the third time you're saying what, you start to feel really stupid, and you're like, I think he said to go touch that button over there. You don't dare push the button if it's the wrong button, though, because the guy's really big and intimidating, man. Yeah. I'm telling you, there's something about not understanding somebody when they're big.
Yeah, and I understand you guys, so I am not intimidated.
Fair enough. Yeah, no, it's a small pet peeve of mine, but it's fine. It's all fine. Bruce, what have you been up to this week?
Well, I've been watching HBO. Okay. And it's not Game of Thrones what I'm watching. I was watching Bright Lights. It's the documentary about Carrie Fisher Debbie Reynolds.
No way.
Yes. And I'm going to tell you right now, I highly recommend it. It's an interesting look into the lives of the two of them together, but also them individually. And I don't really want to say too much because I want everyone to experience it in their own way and get their own opinions of things. But it really is something you should watch, especially after their deaths, and really get to know who they were and what they went through and their love and their struggles together. It was a very good and emotional documentary.
That sounds fantastic. I think we have the HBO add-on to our Amazon Prime, so maybe hopefully we can find it there. Because we're cord cutters, we don't have cable here at the house. So, but I bet we can do it through Amazon. But yeah, I'll definitely check that out for sure. Especially after going to Disney for the tribute this weekend. Speaking of which, that's what I've been up to this past week, is going to Walt Disney World and Disney's Hollywood Studios. So many events, way more than I can recount. We'll talk about it a lot more on the Thursday podcast episode. But there is one story that I have to tell you guys. And it involves everybody's favorite Wookiee. So sit down, kids. Gather around. Uncle Riley's about to spin a tale.
About Lumpy?
That's right, folks. That's all. We'll talk to you next week on the Star Wars Show. As I've talked about here on the show before, I was once upon a time a Disney cynic. In fact, I just didn't understand what the appeal of the parks was, and I just chalked it up to nostalgia for people who watched Disney movies a lot as a kid, and, you know, that's why they go. It can't be that good. It's just, you know, it's a glorified theme park with Mickey Mouse. What can it be? You know, I don't want to go anyway. I'm fine. I don't even care. No, I don't. You know what? I don't even want to go to your Star Wars weekends. Fine. Go there. Have a good time. I don't care. That was me. That was a very passive-aggressive Riley. But I did. I was introduced by host of Star Wars Bookworms, Teresa Delgado, as she was sort of, I had my debut at Disney at Disney Star Wars Weekends, and I never looked back. It was an amazing experience. I begin every time I've gone there since. I've been multiple times a year. It's always a fun time. It's always it sounds so cliche to say, but it truly is a magical place where you can immerse yourself in just. Just incredible architecture, beauty, care, people who are happy and cheerful, excited to be there. And it's such a celebration of Star Wars. So many cool Star Wars things to do there these days. And one of them is the launch bay at Disney's Hollywood Studios, where they have all kinds of props and actual film costumes on display. They have Sabine's helmet, all kinds of just amazing stuff. Amazing stuff. But what I was there's a remainder, a sliver of a cynic that I in me that didn't really want to do this, and that's the opportunity to do character meet and greets.
That's like, so awesome, though.
I don't want to meet Donald Duck. It's like an actor in a costume.
Do.
Again, I'm impersonating the cynical version of me. It's just some guy in a duck suit. It's not Donald Duck. I know it's not actually Chewbacca, all right? But
now,
I did
have
it.
To wonder, is this a guy reaction? Because
it probably
you're
is.
Channeling the inner me before I went my
yeah,
first
exactly.
time. That's exactly how I was. Mm-hmm. I was the Bah Humbug Scrooge McDuck. You guys can all go. I'll stay here. And then I come back singing the, let's go. It's a small world after all. It's like, yeah, I was there. And I think part of it was the meet and greet of Merida. Because I had my button on because we were doing it for my birthday and it said Jedi on it, which is sitting right here, but I pull it off the corkboard. But she's like, oh, you think you're a Jedi, do you? And I was just like, oh my God, she's talking to me. Like I fell so in love for Merida in
I
that
mean,
moment.
Let's be honest. I did it for the first time this past summer and I met Kylo Ren. Terrified me. Not as much as it
That's
terrified
awesome.
Teresa, because Kylo Ren like followed us out of the photo op area and we closed the door and we didn't realize that he had followed us and like Teresa turned around. And then, like, 2 inches from her face was Kylo Ren, and she screamed so loud. And so, like, it was a great experience. But even then, like, I liked it, but it was, like, scary. It's Kylo Ren in character. But I this time, we went to see Chewbacca. It was me, Grace, and Lillian and Bethany, and we all went to go see Chewbacca and do the character meet and greet. It was a short line. It was great. I show up and I was just so excited. I just wanted to give him a hug and everyone was excited. We were getting ready to take the picture. We were all gathering. He was putting his arms around all of our shoulders after Lillian met him and interacted for a few minutes and stuff. And then I get there, you know, I'm kind of off to the side and he's getting ready to, you know, arms around all of us, a big Wookiee roar and it stops. And I see Chewbacca's looking at me and shaking his head, kind of like he does in the trash compactor, right? Just like, and he just starts shaking his head and reacting, and he retreats, and he won't take the picture. And I'm like, what's going on? Why? I thought this was Disney. I thought we're supposed to be happy here. Why doesn't Chewbacca like me? Like me, Chewbacca, please like me. That was
you must have offended him at Dragon Con when you interviewed him.
I well, maybe. You're,
it was the hair balm. He's allergic to peppermint.
You know what it was, gentlemen? Two absolutely fair guesses. Both wrong, I'm sorry to say, but he was offended. He was deeply. And I had totally forgotten as I looked down at my Boba Fett t-shirt.
Oh.
And he starts shaking his head, and he will not take the picture until I kind of cross my arms. And he literally, like, he lifts my arms over my chest for the people who are watching the Facebook Live. This is what I'm doing, right? I'm just like, he won't, so I'm covering. It's sort of like... It's as if I'm like, I'm trying to protect my modesty. And I'm just like sitting there and I'm covering it awkwardly smiling. And I'm like, please take the picture. There's a picture of this of me just like putting my hands together saying, please. And then he does. And then I say, please forgive me, Chewbacca. At the end, he takes the picture and he hesitates for far too long. And then he just relents and gives me a big... big hairy Wookiee hug. And I've never been so
the love
relieved.
Of a good Wookiee. Look at old Ben Solo, man.
I mean,
he
listen,
could have been
I,
shot had it been any other Wookiee.
I'll be honest, I am a man of faith, and it's something that's very important to me. And I don't and I will say this, the second most important person I've ever asked forgiveness from is Chewbacca.
Nice. Well played.
Yeah, good thing you didn't wear a Kylo Ren shirt. He really would have been up.
I was just gonna say that would not have gone well at all. Ladies and gentlemen, on that note, we're gonna have to bring this episode to a close. It doesn't get any better than that, folks. Chewie, forgive me. From the Wookiee. It was such a relief, guys. You have no idea. Folks, this has been the Star Wars Report podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Catch the Friday episode where we recount our full trip to Disney with Bethany, my sister. We give you all the details on the Carrie tribute. That's coming up this Thursday. And next week, coming up on the podcast, it's the one and only Stephen Stanton. Incredible actor extraordinaire, voice of Tarkin, and just an awesome, awesome member of the Star Wars community. Super supportive. I can't wait to have him back on the program. That'll be next week, so subscribe to the podcast. Tell your friends about it. Share us. Leave a review on iTunes. That really helps out. And we forgot, I just checked it. I hadn't looked at it in a while. And over the holidays, over Star Wars Tonight and stuff, we got all kinds of really nice notes up from you guys on iTunes that really, not only does it bring warm feelings to my heart, not unlike Yoda, but it also really helps get the word out about the show. So leave us an iTunes review and rating. Share it with your friends. And also make sure that you follow the show. It's on Twitter and, of course, Facebook. It's just at Star Wars Report and Facebook.com/Star Wars Report. That's about it. Make sure you follow Mr. Bruce Gibson. He's at Admiral_Rex. And, of course, the host of the Literary Treks podcast. Mr. Mark Herleman can be found on Twitter. It is at IllogicalRogue2. And, absolutely. Make sure that you follow him there. And, of course, I'm on Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat. It's at TheRileyGuy. Make sure you follow my Instagram. I've really been there a lot, and I've been experimenting with Instagram stories. I was posting all kinds of stuff during the Disney trip, which was a lot of fun. And of course, email us. I almost forgot. We're soliciting. It's official. We're going to be doing a series on Star Wars Celebration. So if you have any questions about how to navigate it, suggestions for other people who will be doing it for the first time, make sure you email us, StarWarsReport@gmail.com, StarWarsReport@gmail.com. That's what you want to do. And, of course, make sure that you tune in live every Friday night. And, of course, so the times do vary. But if you follow our social media, we'll let you know. It's Facebook.com/StarWarsReport. Enable those notifications so that you know that when we go live, and you can tune into the podcast. And a big thank you to everybody who tuned into the podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, that does it. Remember, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast. And we don't care. I'm sorry, guys. That's what they're there
we're
for.
We're enablers.
That's what they're there for. They're Bothans. They die. They all die. Not unlike the ending of Rogue One. That's all, folks. Is it too soon? No, it's not too soon. Hey, guys, you're listening to the brand new remix of Farm Boy by High Adventure. Big thanks to them for producing this amazing remix. We'll be hearing it more on the show, so let's take it out with Farm Boy by High Adventure. This has been the Star Wars Report podcast. Remember, the Force is with us, always.
Yes. I apologize for enabling so many people.
That's a problem. Thank you for listening to the Star Wars Report podcast. Remember, the opinions expressed in the podcast are not the opinions of the Bothans. Why?
Mon Mothma!
I was going to say, why would the opinions expressed in this podcast not be those of the Bothans? You want to take a random guess, Bruce Gibson?
Because the Bothans died.
Yes, because they died! Time, folks. Thanks for tuning in live. We appreciate it. We'll be back next week. That's my favorite thing ever. All right, we'll see you guys.
Lion Star Tours.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.